Hello, good evening, welcome to another episode of Guns and Yellow Ribbons. My name is Fergus, I am your host. Tonight on Guns and Yellow Ribbons, we are going to be talking about the Brentford game. We're also going to look ahead to the Porto game in the Champions League, second round of the round of six, our second leg of the round of 16. I'm joined by my good friends, Alex, Dan, and of course, Gunnar Hilsey. Hope you enjoy the show.
Get ready for the world's greatest Arsenal podcast. Welcome to another podcast by Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Enjoy the show.
Dan, I am absolutely shocked and surprised to see you joining us today. The Blackstock boogie kicked in and it was a late one, wasn't it, on Saturday? Sunday morning, wasn't it?
I've got no recollection other than the next day I didn't move from my sofa and I ordered breakfast, lunch and dinner from Uber Eats. That was how much I did not move. So, yeah.
I did hear of some ginger fella in a kebab shop trying to do pigeon Turkish. Was that you?
Oh, that's my alter ego. It definitely wasn't me, mate. I'll tell you what, you're a bad influence, you are, Fergus. Fergus said, we'll go for a drink. We'll have one drink in the Blackstock. Well, Fergus didn't even turn up. And
I couldn't get in.
Yeah. And then Lyle being a bad influence kept me there drinking to all hours, and I've been hanging out my backside ever since.
It's good. It's really good. I just been the WhatsApps and the WhatsApp groups have been hilarious over the weekend with Dan, because the drunker and the more hungover Dan gets, the more chatty he gets on WhatsApp, and then he gets back into business and you don't hear from him for forever. But when he's hanging out of his backside, that's when you hear from him the most. Alex, bags packed, ready for the flight tomorrow?
Yes, been looking forward to it for a long time now. I want to go every game, but obviously can't fly over every week. So, but been looking forward to it ever since the last time I went over for the Liverpool game.
Alex, did you make a promise today?
I think I maybe made a little promise that we'd say hi to Jason in the chat today.
Yeah.
Hey, Jason.
Evening, Jason. Hope you're well, mate.
Thank you for watching along.
Yeah,
love that you jumped onto YouTube. I know that you watch us on Twitter as well. So it's really thanks for jumping across and click the subscribe button if you can. Trev, we bumped into podcast listening royalty. We bumped into the one, the only from Iceland, Arnie, and his good wife. It was really good to see and met him outside the Gunners, and then we brought him down past the old girl, and then we took a walk to the ground. Unfortunately, they were in a different area of the ground, so we couldn't spend the whole time together, but it was really good to meet Arnie and his missus, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it was, man. Just a bit embarrassed that I'd had quite a bit to drink by then. But yeah, it was lovely to meet Arnie and his missus. I talked to him a bit about where he lives in Iceland and the problems they've had recently. It's been for a bit of a hard time, our Arnie, but, mate, I wish you all the best, and I hope it's all sorted out and you're back living where you should be soon, pal.
Before we go into talking about the Brentford game, I think there's got to be a big shout-out to the main man himself. Let's get rid of this banner a second. The main man himself. Oh, no. There we go. Manager of the month, for February, Mikel Arteta. The banner's not going. It couldn't have been anybody else, could it, Trev, other than Mikel Arteta for Manager of the Month?
Mate, Arteta was a shoo-in, wasn't he? An absolute shoo-in. You can't do any more than win all your games by a country mile, you know? I'm not going to mention him, but the Player of the Month took a little bit more of understanding. I couldn't quite figure that one out, but... yeah, Arteta absolutely deserved it. I mean, if you're going to win every game in the month and score 4, 5, 6 goals, then, yeah, you're going to get Manager of the Month. Well, hopefully.
Alex, being a Scandinavian, can you understand why Højlund was picked over Saka?
Not really, to be honest. I think Saka had 8 goal involvements and Højlund had 5 or 6. But yeah, it's a funny thing. I think De Bruyne's never won the player of the month, but Peter Odemwingie from West Bromwich, he won it 3 times. So I don't know how much the award says about a player's qualities. It's the media who picks it. But yeah, fair play to Arteta. And sometimes I just think it's Arteta's first managerial job. And it's just insane how well he's done at Arsenal, considering it's his like first job and how big of a task it was he took on when he joined.
Dan, it just proves that the manager or the player of the month, and not necessarily in this case, but the manager of the month in some cases, is as understandable, believable as VAR and some of the decisions that happened there. But
I'm happier the fact that we broke the curse as well, because normally the manager of the month is a curse, isn't it? Whoever wins it tends to lose their next game. So it's very good that we got the win against Brentford.
You know what? It's like we almost script this sort of thing. We did make it difficult, didn't we? It was a 2-1 win for the Arsenal in that game. It took us like 104 minutes, I think, in total. We started off brightly, and in the second minute, Ivan Toney had to clear the ball off the line from a set piece from Declan Rice. But it took 19 minutes, Trevor, for Rice to get the opener. A great header and an assist by Ben White, who has just grown into this role of a right back, which he's never been.
Ben White, a provider, right? It's another thing he's added to his, you know, to his game. He's putting some great balls into the box, and we've now got people in the box that can get on the end of these crosses. We haven't had it in previous seasons, you know, but we now got Havertz, and now Rice is showing that he can do the same. So it's great that we're getting the crosses in. Ben White, outstanding, Fergus, absolutely outstanding. And after we scored the first goal, I thought we looked very comfortable, really, against, don't forget, a Brentford side that are a standard above anything else we've played in the last month, you know. So, yeah, I was very happy with the way it started, mate, to be honest.
You are excused. I'm the one who gets mixed mistakes. You shouldn't. So we can have two of us, okay?
Sorry.
Dan, it's all right. It's quite interesting that Brentford have conceded 16, well, later on, it ends up being 18 goals, I think, headed goals, which is the biggest number that any club has conceded by headed goals. They're not a small side. Where are they going wrong?
Yeah, it's not something you'd sort of think about with Brentford. Like when you start to think of their centre halves, and I know they've got quite a few injuries at the back, but a team like that that's quite dogged and sits in, you'd expect them to be pretty good in the air. So a little bit of a shock there, but also down to our quality, right? I think as you said, sort of the crosses from Ben White, fantastic crosses, and two very different crosses as well. You know, the first one he's picked him out from more of an inverted role, and the second one it's more like a traditional right back's role of where he's made the cross from. But yeah, and also the quality of the header from Rice. I think Rice has been even better than he was previously by playing in that more of an 8 role. And I think he's been, with Jorginho alongside him, a completely different player. And he was already fantastic to start with. So, you know, to see him get into the box more often is only going to be a big benefit for us. And yeah, just hopefully alongside Partey for the big games for me.
Alex, Declan Rice has just been a revelation. We talked about him before last week, and we've talked about him probably most weeks. He scored now 6 goals this season for Arsenal, and I expect him. We've got 16 goals till Wembley and the 2nd of June when we parade the double down at the Emirates. You know, I'm expecting more goals from him. Around where I live, there's lots of West Ham fans, and they're very passionate about Declan Rice. A lot of them are very complimentary and saying how much he was going to improve. And there's other people, you know, the West Ham faithful really, really think highly of him. He has just improved 6 goals in one season already. I can see him getting maybe to double figures.
Yeah, especially if he stays on the set pieces, I think. We didn't really know how good he was when he came to Arsenal, because we'd seen at West Ham how good he was as a holding midfielder and how well he defended it on the transitions and stuff like that. But I mean, he's just grown immensely since he's joined Arsenal, and the quality he has on the ball now. And now he's moving further into the eight position with Jorginho as the holding midfielder. I mean, he just keeps on improving. And in the last game, he scored like a striker-esque goal where he arrived late into the box and finished well. And then this time as well, he's in the box. He's a brilliant header off the ball. Again, he takes all the set pieces. So yeah, I can clearly see him getting to double figures in goals or assist. So yeah, he's a phenomenal player. And he had a brilliant game.
He did an outstanding game. Dan, not got off the game itself, but focusing a little bit on Declan Rice. What Alex just said about him playing in that eight role, is that the key to him improving as a player and offering more? Because the guy seems that like he can play in most positions on the pitch. Like, as we said in the earlier game, I think it was against Sheffield. Okay, they'd given up, or he was scoring like a number 10. But that number eight role, he was interviewed about 2 or 3 months ago, and he said he actually really likes it. He's not played in that role before, but he really likes it. Is that the key to his improvement?
I think that's his better role, and I don't see him as just a six. I think he's wasted there. Like, he can play that role fantastic, and by the way, he'll probably be one of the best in the world in that role. But I just think, don't underestimate someone playing alongside him and letting him be a bit free. Jorginho has been a massive influence on him, and as I said, I think if Partey comes back, it will be even better. But I see Rice as being the replacement for Xhaka, not Havertz, and I think you'll see either Partey come in back to that side or someone else come into that role in the summer if we sign a midfielder, because he's a different animal. He offers physicality further up the pitch. He's technical. He can get in the box. I think Sky just a minute ago, they just brought up a stat on Monday Night Football about Rice before Jorginho came into the side and Rice after he came into the side. And the number of times he gets in the box, number of late runs he makes. And I think he scored 3 goals in the last 8 compared to 3 in his previous games for us. And yeah, you just see how much of a difference he's making to the side in that role and popping up when we really need him.
Hmm. But looking at that lineup, it was Ramsdale enforced because of the loanee move for Ray. And we will talk about Ramsdale and the good, the bad, the ugly about the situation. But we'll also talk about it in a very Arsenal-centric and a supportive way. We had White, Saliba, Gabriel, Kivior, Rice, Jorginho, Odegaard, Saka, Trossard and Havertz. Martinelli wasn't available due to the cut on his foot. Jorginho, though, Trevor, he and Havertz and he and Rice and he... Jorginho seems to be the pivot, the key to releasing that whole front area. And whether it was going to be Partey or whoever it was at the start of the season where things weren't ticking, but it seems since we come back at the beginning of the year and we do have that solid 6 and solid 8. Jorginho put Havertz straight through about 35 minutes in, but Havertz, unfortunately, didn't hit the back of the net. But he is opening them up nicely, isn't he?
Yeah, look, right. It's, for me, Jorginho and Havertz are the key, right? Havertz is moving defences around like we haven't had anyone to do that. He's actually, for me... I know that people had a bit of a conversation about it today. For me, Havertz is becoming that plan B I wanted. He's using his size in the box. He's moving people around. And with Rice playing further forward, Rice is taking advantage of them spaces, I'm sure of it. And the biggest praise you can give Jorginho, this is how good I feel Jorginho has been. The biggest praise I can give Jorginho is that we've not missed a player of Partey's quality. We genuinely haven't missed him, not in my view. Jorginho has come in and been absolutely outstanding, releasing the ball forward. And you see, Rice scoring goals as well. We've added another arrow to our bow, haven't we? Because we've got a load of goal scorers. We've got, you know, Martinelli scores double figures. Saka scores double figures. Odegaard's been in double figures, you know. And now we're saying Rice is going to get double figures. And Havertz has scored 4 in 4. goals are coming from all over the park, you know. And I honestly think that the key to that is Jorginho giving Rice more space, time to move forward. And Havertz, he's moving defences around. With the greatest respect to Jesus through the middle, Jesus is very similar to the lads all around him. Havertz is a different proposition. Havertz is going to get on the end of a cross. Havertz is going to convert a chance. He's shown that in the last four games. And he puts a completely different perspective on the way the Arsenal are playing. And I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it. I just hope we can take this form into 19 days' time. You know, I know we've got Porto first. I'm not brushing that aside. But we just, if we carry this form that we've had up to the Etihad, we're in with a hell of a shout up there. We're really playing so well.
The only thing on that, Trev, that I disagree with is I would say I don't think Havertz is becoming our plan B. I think he's becoming our plan A. And I think that's how well he's played. That at the minute, I don't think you change the side. I think at the minute, Jesus has got to work very, very hard to get back into that team.
Yeah. No. Oh, Dan, absolutely, son. Absolutely, I get that. And when I said plan B, that was the context I meant it, you know. The plan B can become the plan A, can't it? That is what football is all about, you know. And me, for one, I don't know if people want to comment and have a go at me or tell me I'm wrong, but if I see Jesus coming back in this side at the expense of Havertz at the moment, I'm wondering what the hell's going on. I really am. I mean, I trust that manager, don't get me wrong. But if Havertz is dropped for anyone else, I'm thinking, what's happening? What's happening? Surely we can't get any better.
He's got to be one of the first players of the starting lineup, Alex. And who would have thought that 2 months ago?
Yeah, I mean, the first couple of months was quite rough for him. And I think when you look back at how he played back then, you can see like his confidence was very low. And he is a player who thrives off like his relational play with other players. That's why he was so good at Leverkusen, his timing and his runs, arriving late in the box, so on. And I think when you look back, you can see his timing was off and he really needed to grow these relations and his confidence as well. And I think that's what he's done and that's why he's so good right now, because his timing is perfect from those crosses. He's really starting to find his way with the other players as well. And when Jesus came on, he dropped a bit further down, but it just gave Brentford another player to mark in the box, and that's why he was free for the last header. So he just adapts, and yeah, he's just a brilliant player.
Hmm. Dan, talking about players with confidence, we had a player that hadn't played since November at Brentford away, who was between the sticks ahead of this game, and we spoke over a few beers beforehand, and we were like, we're looking forward to seeing Ramsdale back between the sticks. We said among ourselves it may not be the case. You know, many people speculate it could possibly be in his last appearance in the Premier League wearing an Arsenal shirt. I hope that's not the case. Personally, I'd like to see him stay and have involvement with the team. But I know you are a huge advocate of Raya, and when we're standing in block five, I could see the difference that Raya offers us in the way that our recirculation of the ball when it comes to the keeper and it recirculates back into play again. While we saw some fantastic saves from Aaron in the second half, which we will talk about, and we did see him, you know, it's when the ball comes into his feet, he seems to be a little bit more slower to move it out. And that's where he got caught out by a great closing down by Wiese, whatever his name is.
But you're doing so well until that point, Fergus.
I was.
Mate. You were doing so well. I was thinking the eyes. Great, great line. He's teeing it up well, and then he's gone with a whistle. The first thing I'd say, Fergus, is I'm not fussed either way what happens with Ramsdale, because for me, it's win-win. If he stays, we've got a fantastic, fantastic backup goalkeeper that can still come in and do exactly what he did for us in that game, which is keep us in it with some fantastic saves. And if he leaves, I think sometimes you have to say to players that are not playing week in, week out, that want to move on and play, good luck, wish you well, thank you very much for what you've done, which is an awful lot for our club at a time when we needed a bit of a pickup. We needed more connection with our players, and he's done that. And not only has he done that, he's done it very well, made some fantastic saves along the way and played fantastic for us as a club. But I think it's clear that Raya is the better keeper of the two. I think he's settled in now a lot more. But at the same point, as much as I praise Raya, there's absolutely no criticism for me for Ramsdale for anything. You know, players make mistakes. It is what it is. We move on. We shouldn't be there criticising players like Ramsdale. If he stays and he plays, I'm very happy. If he goes, I wish him luck.
Trev, you didn't want to see this photograph, but you are. And I want to talk to you about it because I know what you said in the WhatsApp group earlier. Wiese closed him down really, really well. He did take four touches of the ball before he went to clear it and got closed down. But a question to me that came to me was, Gabby, as good as he is, did he pass the ball back just that little bit slow, or was it? It's a combination of three things, I think, in the sense of the touches and the back pass and Wiese working on his confidence. What was your thoughts on it? And not the reaction of some people, but the actual.
Well, do you know what, Ferg? It's really important. I'm glad you've asked me this, mate. But you have to touch on the reaction of some people very briefly before you can look at what happened. There were by far the minority, the extreme minority in the stadium, but there were some moaning about Ramsdale. And what I would say is, I'm an Arsenal fan, right? I support Arsenal Football Club. So if Ramsdale makes an error, I'm going to say, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm going to have a little swear. But then I'm going to look at reasons why he'd done it, right? And for me, right, he's come back into the side. He's not played since November, is it?
Yeah.
He doesn't play games. He trains hard, but that's not like playing in matches, right? And his mind's not game focused every week, right? So they've brought him back in and he's made an error. And it's an error we don't want him to make. It's an error that could have been avoided. But if you think it's the first game he's played in 6 months, you can sort of see why he wanted to take that extra touch, you know? And don't forget, right? I'm with Dan, right? I think that at the moment, Raya is the person we want between the sticks as our number one, right? But don't forget, when Raya came into the side, a nervous David Raya, a David Raya that didn't know the rest of the squad, a David Raya that was probably nervous about taking a place from the England's number one, David Raya was nervous. David Raya made some howlers in them first three or four games, right? And what he did was, over the next half a dozen games, he developed and he got his confidence up and he's turned out to be a fine goalkeeper for us, David Raya. And that's probably what happened with Ramsdale. We all know Ramsdale plays with his, you know, with his heart on his sleeve. He's all full of twitches and twists and turns. He'd be nervous as hell about coming out of there, right? And he made a mistake. And anyone in that crowd that decided that the next step for them was to have a go at Ramsdale, you've got to question your actions, because what Ramsdale really needed after he let that goal in was to be lifted by the crowd. And thankfully, most of the crowd, the vast majority of the crowd, did lift him. And in the second half, he showed us what a quality goalkeeper we have as our backup. You know, he just got his fingertips to that shot from, what's his name, Tony. And you have to wonder, Raya's 3 or 4 inches shorter, would he have reached it, you know? So I'm at the moment happy with Raya, right? Really happy with what we've got in goal. He's shown himself to be a fine keeper. But if we have to play Ramsdale, don't pick on him if he makes an error. Think about the reasons why he might be a bit off the ball and give him some backing and lift him. Because that, don't forget, to finish off, I know I've waffled here. Don't forget, before Ramsdale, what did we have? We had no hope, right? We had fans that didn't know where our next goal was coming from. We didn't have we had goalkeepers that had played poorly for us. Ramsdale was the start of it all, not only with his goalkeeping performances, but with the way he interacts with the fans. Absolutely. Ramsdale gave us that massive lift. He's the reason that we're now moving on to a goalkeeper of Raya's class who can come into a side on the front foot. So I love Ramsdale, but I'm happy with Raya.
I will come to you in a second, Alex, but on Ramsdale and that, because I know you've got some stuff that you want to add about his performance in the first half aside from that. But just briefly, Dan, there were people around us who jumped straight down his throat. I subsequently jumped straight down their throat. But it was amazing to watch them in the second half.
You did that to everyone.
I do, yeah.
I'm just really interested in the comment that I just saw in the chat. If we'd lost or drawn this discussion, we'd be different. It wouldn't be any different. And for me, that's because as a fan, I don't think you let one mistake or one result change your perspective. You know, if we'd have lost or drawn this game, it doesn't change my opinion of Raya or Ramsdale. The same as when Raya was making mistakes earlier, it didn't change my opinion of Raya. I think people were too easy to change their direction and flip-flop on their opinions at the minute, depending on results and mistakes. One mistake doesn't make the man. So, no, for me, not different at all.
And to answer Carl directly, that's exactly the discussion I had with the disgruntled fan behind me, who was effing and jeffing and saying how bad he was, and he's get out of our club, you're this, you're that, you're the other. I hadn't seen this guy. I've been at every game for the last, well, nearly every game at home for the last 12 years in that same seat.
We know.
And I hadn't seen him there before. I knew his friend, and I nodded to his friend to say, look, I'm not going to go in like physically hard on the guy, but I'm going to give him verbals. It was all fine in the end, but it was just, you know, just think we're there because of, we support Arsenal Football Club. We support anybody who's wearing our shirt, and win, lose or draw, we're there behind them, regardless, home and abroad. That's it. Alex, without getting bogged down in some negativity about some people, there were some really positive things of Ramsdale's performance in the first half. And then let's go into the second half as well.
Yeah, I don't want to go on forever about Ramsdale, but I think just quickly, like, I think his mistake was like a result of two things. And one of the things has been mentioned before, he hasn't played a lot. The last time he played was against Liverpool in the FA Cup. And he hasn't had much game time, and you can't really replicate that in training. And the way we play our goalkeeper is just very, very demanding. And I mean, different to most other goalkeepers. So, I mean, being put in there, haven't had much game time, it's just a lapse of concentration. And it doesn't excuse the fact that he made the mistake, but I mean, it explains why it happened. Because it is very demanding to play the way we play out from the back. And you have a lot of touches as the goalkeeper as well. But I mean, he did some other good things in the game as well. Just shortly before we scored our first goal, he made like an impressive, quite impressive throw, nearly half the length of the pitch to Trossard. And I think if that would have been Martinelli, he probably would have outpaced the Brentford defender and scored. So, I mean, I think he slightly made up for the error he made. And I mean, the other two good saves he had as well. It's just not nice to see some parts of our fan base go in on him, because he doesn't deserve it. He's been such a great servant for the club, and I mean, we'll just have to see what happens now. But yeah, just get behind the guy and support him, because he's a proper Arsenal player as well.
This is a really good point that has been made on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it these
exactly,
days.
Exactly, yeah.
Partey, when he came on at Sheffield, he looked rusty. He didn't look like Matt Ray. Jesus hasn't. You know, the squad, and there was a comment further up again about like whatever affected our title challenge. The squad affects our title challenge, because things will happen, and you know, things happened. Look at the Alisson's going to be out for 4 or 5 weeks. That's really going to impact on the FA Cup and the league challenge for City. Liverpool have got lots of injuries, so things happen.
Do you mean Edison, Fergus?
Edison. Yeah, thank you. Listen,
transfer news here on Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Alisson leaves Liverpool and joins
Yeah, but what I mean is that it's a squad game. So, you know, we had no choice but to play Ramsdale in that particular game. Not that he didn't have a bad game. He did one error. Let's go into the second half. You know, saves from Ramsdale, from Tony's shot from long range. And what an audacious shot it was, Dan. I know Trev touched on it briefly already, but I think Raya, with that slightly height difference, may have struggled to get that. And also, Ramsdale has got a track record of those awkward cat-like sort of things. He'd done it at Leicester, he'd done it at Newcastle last season. So he has a track record of being able to move in those awkward ways to stop that. Fantastic by both for that one and the Collins one.
Honestly, 100% spot on. I was sitting there thinking something similar when Trevor was saying that myself, just thinking, I don't know if Raya would have saved that. You know, everyone's got their sort of pros and cons, and I think it's quite clear that Raya, with the ball at his feet, maybe isn't as decisive as he should be. But one thing he is good, and is one of his best attributes, is his reactions to those sort of types of instances. And I honestly think most keepers in the Premier League may not have saved that, if I'm totally honest. It was an unbelievable shot and effort from Tony. And every time I see it from a different angle, it just looks better and better. So you have to sometimes take your hat off and say, well done, top draw. It's something that, you know, it's beyond just a goalkeeper's, you know, inside a goalkeeper's normal remit. That's a top draw save. That's the same as a striker hitting it from 40 yards and smashing the top bins.
Ferg, you know what? Listen, talking some sense to these boys here. But I think we should put this to bed now, mate, really, because what I'll say is that, Raya would have been a yard nearer the goal, so he would have saved it because the ball would have dropped a bit further. Raya's our number one, and we can see why. And we've got Ramsdale to come on for the rest of the season if we need him. And I'd rather have Ramsdale than Ospina coming on any day of the week, wouldn't you? So, you know.
Oh, I mean, privileged. Yeah.
We're privileged.
You mean, Ospina.
We've got England's prospective number one goalkeeper as a backup. We've got defenders that can come in now as a backup, especially when Timber's fit in a few weeks' time, and they're not going to weaken our side. We've got a midfield that Partey or Jorginho has got to miss out. You know what I mean? We've got forwards now, you know. Havertz comes in and Trossard's not getting a game, or Martinelli's not getting a game. We're in a great place. We need to... And I can see why we've picked this to pieces for not far off a half an hour with this goalkeeper now. But, mate, I wouldn't change our situation, would you?
No, absolutely not. We've done 10 or 15 minutes in particular on Raya, but we're in the second half and there was two penalty claims that people are talking about.
What I would say, just as a quick reply, is that don't forget it gets highlighted because he's a goalkeeper, and same as defenders do. When they make mistakes, it normally ends up in the goal. So that's why it does get picked to pieces a little bit more, which is probably unfair because, you know, he gets more scrutiny in that position than the other player, but same as the striker, if they miss an open goal in an open net, you're probably going to be saying, come on, mate, you got to do your job.
Yeah, no, I do agree that goalkeepers are more under the spotlight for their errors than most other players on the pitch, because there's 10 other players that can cover up for a goalkeeper. There's nobody who can cover up for a goalkeeper. Two penalty claims. There was one for Trossard, and then there was the other one for Havertz. The Havertz penalty claim has been talked about a lot, in the sense of
come on, let's be honest.
He dived. There was no contact whatsoever. And Frank's comment about he shouldn't have been on the pitch. For me, let me show this very brief clip of the first yellow card that he got, because I don't feel the first yellow card, hence if he did get a yellow card for simulation for the penalty, I don't think the first yellow card is strong enough. Let me add this and see how it goes. One second. There we go. Now, for me, both players are jumping and leading with their arms. You pull yourself up off this... I don't know, virtual wall or whatever it is. You use your arms to levitate yourself. Alex, what was your thoughts on the first yellow card and then go into his dive? Yes, he should have had a yellow for that.
Yeah, I think I think the fact that there'd been quite a few yellow cards previous to that as well in the game is probably why I gave the yellow card, but I didn't really think it was a yellow card. As you said, it was quite a natural movement. There was no ill intent in the way he went up with his elbow. So, yeah, for me, it wasn't a yellow card. I think I wouldn't have said anything if he'd given the yellow card for the dive, because, I mean, maybe there's slight contact. But
no contact.
He did not. Yeah, he did anticipate.
There is no contact.
Yeah, I mean, there was contact. They did touch each other, but it was ever so slightly and not enough for him to go down. And he did anticipate it. And we saw it at the United game as well, where he dived for the penalty. And it's something I'd like him to get rid of in his game. We've seen it a couple of times now. So hopefully we won't see that again. But, I mean, we won't say anything if he dives and gets the penalty. But I was a bit disappointed about Thomas Frank after the game, because normally he's quite sympathetic and honest in his interviews and comes across really nice, but I thought it was a bit bitter afterwards to go out and say that Havertz shouldn't have been on the pitch and we shouldn't have got a winner in the end, because there were so many ifs. And I think Trossard could have been a penalty. Yeah, it was a bit whining. I think Trossard could have had a penalty. Gabriel should definitely have had a penalty when he got pulled down by Lewis Potter, I think it was. Towards the end, I can't see how that was the penalty.
For me, the Trossard one was more than the Gabriel one. If I'm honest,
really?
If I look at it. Yeah.
Well, for me, the Gabriel was much clearer, because he was in front of his man and he got pulled back, and you can clearly see the shirt pull as well. The Trossard one for me, he just had his hand on his shoulder and slightly pulled down, and. For me, the fact that Trossard probably wouldn't have got the ball, where with the Gabriel one, he sort of hindered his chance to get to the ball.
Okay, fair comments.
Yeah, but I mean, it didn't really seem like VAR even looked at them. So I don't know if you saw anything in the ground.
VAR did look at the first one. Well, looked at both of them, but looked at the Trossard one. And I remember speaking to Dan at the time saying, I thought that Trossard went down quite easily. Although when I saw it later on Match of the Day, it looked like he'd been strangled and pulled back. And subsequently, I did see the Gabriel one. I didn't really notice that in the ground so much, but we did have a few beers. I saw that, and I thought I was just a bit more fixated on the Trossard one. Dan, the view that the referee had from the Havertz dive, we'll call it as it is quite restricted. I'm going to show you briefly again. I can't put long on because otherwise YouTube do me. But let's have a look at this. So that's his view. He can't see very much.
Can we have a bit more than that? Just because
didn't you get that, Dan?
Yeah.
So I'm going to get done. Hang on. Let me push it on a little bit more. A couple of seconds. All right. Let's bring it to here where you actually see. Thing. So there's very little contact, very minimal contact, and when you see it from another angle, that it doesn't look like any contact at all. But yeah, he's made the little bit of contact that there was. So
I say your thought. 8.5 is my view. Look, let's be honest. Take my Arsenal cap off for a second, put my football hat on. You don't want to see it in the game. If that was anyone else, if that was a City or a Liverpool at this moment and they didn't get a second yellow card, I'd be absolutely fuming. Now, I'm absolutely over the moon that hasn't happened.
Blinkers on.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I'm over the moon because I'm an Arsenal fan. And if you really ask me if it's a case of not winning or winning by any other sort of method, I'm going to take Arsenal winning all day long. But as a football fan, you don't want to see it. It's a clear dive. I actually agree with Thomas Frank that he should have had a second yellow. And I also think the first one's a yellow card, to be honest with you.
Do you think that, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think, I know you usually
didn't look at the man first, though.
It doesn't matter. It's about endangering an opponent. And you can jump with your arms in a certain way that's natural without throwing your elbow back. And even if you tackle someone and get the ball now, it's not enough to get the ball. It's not enough that you're going for the ball in the air. If you
well, clearly is. It clearly is. If you look at the Man City Liverpool game,
wait a minute. They've just shown. I've got Sky Sports News on in the background, boys. They've just shown Declan Rice's headed goal there, right? When Declan Rice heads that in, he's only jumped a little bit, but where's his left arm? Up here.
Yeah. Yep.
That's where they all go. That's where they go. If you try and jump and you want them to get height, that's where they go. I'm sorry, Danny boy.
Where they go, but if it doesn't hit a player, it's okay. It's the same as a bicycle kick. You can have a bicycle kick, but if it hits a player, you're in trouble. And I think that's where a lot of the uproar has come because of yesterday's sort of last-minute non-penalty as such with Chelsea and Liverpool, is why people are arguing it should be a penalty. And
Is that not a foul on the Brentford player there? His arm is on his shoulder. He's pushing into him.
No, I mean, he's not endangering him by hitting him in the face, is he, really?
But the Brentford player, the opponent to Kai Havertz in the first yellow card, he's also leading. And the only reason he didn't get Kai in the face is because Kai got slightly above him.
I think we're in a different era now. Look, I think if you look 10 years ago, I'd absolutely agree. But nowadays, you don't have to do anything wrong to get a booking if you endanger an opponent.
So it's the game's fault, not Kai Havertz's fault.
Well, look, we're less of a contact sport than we've ever been in football nowadays. So
Alex just made a really important point, Danny, in that if you want to catch someone squarely with your elbow, you've got to look at where they are first. You've got to look at where they are first. And Havertz had eyes for the ball and his arm was no higher than the other blokes. It's just that Havertz's arm was in front, so he caught him with it, right?
But that was my point.
Sorry, Ferg. Sorry, Alex. Sorry, Ferg. the more interesting thing for me and being slightly pedantic is, right, and I'm being slightly pedantic, not towards you, Dan, but it, looking at the situation.
Yeah, you're picking on me.
Is that... When a penalty is given or not given for a dive or not a dive, right? That is the referee gives what he sees and VAR gives what they see, right? Now, I'll tell you, Sparks TV has made a great point here. I made it today, right? What isn't debatable and what should be a yellow card is giving fake cards. At the start of the season, that was a crackdown. I think it was Odegaard got a booking for it, didn't he? I think
he did,
if I remember rightly. And suddenly it's all stopped. There should have been three or four Brentford cards that got players that got a booking for simulating the card. You know, so you can break it down in all sorts of ways, you know. And as for Thomas Frank, Thomas Frank's a football manager in the best league in the world, right? In the best league in the world. And he did exactly what all good managers do when he gave his interview. He saw what he wanted to see and he didn't see what he didn't want to see. They pick and they choose, yeah? They pick and they choose. He conveniently forgot to say that Trossard was headlocked to the floor and that wasn't given. I thought that was the clearest penalty of the day. But, you know, the way we're talking now just goes to show it's all down to perception of an incident, right? Yeah. Elbows, trips, dives, it's perception. But what's not perception is a player giving that. And no, I was told at the start of the season, that's a booking.
Without going into a tangent into another debate, because I do agree with you, Trev, that you can go into kicking the ball after the whistle with Robin van Persie got done in the Champions League. You can go into when Tomiyasu got done for the throw-in at Palace at the beginning of the season. There's loads of things that are introduced as rules that aren't followed through, and that's the inconsistency of referees. But let's talk about this game because we've got the Porto game to talk about as well.
One thing I would say is something that someone, I can't remember who it was that said it, said, I wouldn't have argued if it had been given as a yellow card and they just sent him off. The only reason I probably might have slightly argued is exactly that point, inconsistencies. And I do believe it should be a second yellow card, but then there's so many that should be second yellow cards that are also not given that you could argue either way there too.
Well, there's the one in the which I was type alluding to earlier on, which is the last minute penalty claim in the City Liverpool game yesterday. They're talking about he got the ball, but for me, I looked at it. If that was against an Arsenal player, I'd be fuming. I thought he got more man than ball. I didn't see very much of the ball. So, but
let's nailed on, Ferg. Nailed on, mate.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think we've just got to prepare for like these last 10 games, where all games involving Arsenal, City, and Liverpool. Every single refereeing decision is going to come under scrutiny. And we're going to talk a lot about the refereeing decisions probably in these last games, because we'll go like, oh, what if he did gave this and didn't give that? But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just what it's going to be like for the last couple of games.
We'll talk to Ronnie. Look, so Jorginho came on, went off for Jesus in the 70th minute. We then entered into the 84th, 85th minute, and four out of our last 19 wins came in the 85th minute, which is, here he goes again. The thing is, people don't understand, he's chattering away like that. Try sitting on a two-hour flight and a three-hour car journey and then waiting in the airport. He does that constantly, all the time. I pity poor Donna. I get it like once a fortnight, but Jesus Christ. Rice had a long-range shot, which he was...
60 million, Dan, a drain. Kai Havertz scored again. Sorry, folks. Go on, son.
Mate, we got our highest viewing figures, and you're singing like a crow, for Christ's sake. Declan Rice, Alex, hit the upright corner, like that corner thing.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a beauty. We talk about Tony's possible goal. That Rice, if that had gone in, that would have been a scream, and the place would have gone nuts.
That reminded me of some of the goals Partey scored last season, where he just get the ball laid off on the edge of the penalty areas and just laced it through with his inside of the foot. And it nearly bent into the top corner, but just about hit the upright. So, yeah, I mean, imagine if he'd got that match winner, we'd be praising him even more. But yeah, he's just an incredible player. And I mean, next game, he could score that goal. His shooting is incredible, and that's something I underestimated when he first came to the Arsenal. I don't think any of us would have thought that he'd be our set piece taker. We'd be thinking he'd be in the mixer because he's a good header of the ball as well. But apparently, the guy can do anything.
He's just an all-round player, isn't he? He's just an all-round player. We made further substitutions on 79 minutes. We took Kivior and Trossard off. Nelson and Zinny got back into the mix. But then on the 86th minute, this happened. I left that on longer because whilst the goal was good, whilst the assist was good, Trevor, the noise in that stadium was just unreal. And that video clip type of captures it.
I think that's the loudest library I've ever been in, mate, to be honest. It was just the passion shown by our amazing fans, and we've spoken at Ramsdale and we've spoke about the negatives, but come on, the positives are miles ahead and far outweigh it. The passion shown by our fans, the second half, I thought the atmosphere was superb. You know, we were the better side, we deserved to win the game, and whether it was relief, celebration, a bit of everything, it was fantastic.
Celebration, please, might get you.
Oh, no, don't. I hope he's not watching. I hope he's not watching. I've only just got out of jail. But no, it was right at this moment in time. Man, I'm enjoying being an Arsenal fan. And trust me, I'm 61 years old and I've seen some highs, right? And I've seen some lows. But right now, we are buzzing. We are buzzing, right? It was superb. I'm so proud of every single one of them Arsenal fans in that stadium. And when you look at that celebration there, the important thing is the non-goal scorers, right? Particularly Saliba in that clip, but White does it a lot. Gabriel does it a lot. They're all getting in the crowd, all celebrating. Odegaard does it. Come on, lifting the crowd. And we've got that special connection between the fans, the players. And over the last few games, in fairness, the club have joined in, haven't they? You know, with the fireworks and with the smoke and the fire. And it's just lifting everything. The whole place is on fire. Absolutely on fire.
Dan, it was electric. We were in block five, and we were looking at each other going, oh. The ball was in play 50 minutes out of 104 minutes of total game time. It looked like Porto part two in times what Brentford were doing. But we broke them down. We found a way. And type of linking that into what we've got coming up tomorrow night, we're going to have more of that again tomorrow night, aren't we?
Do you know what the one thing is, though, at the minute? Something's changed where I feel like we're going to score. And honestly, the start of the season, I didn't feel like that was the case. Whereas now, I just back us to be able to get a goal at any moment. So, look, tomorrow's close. Tomorrow's not going to be easy, but I do think we're more than capable. But the biggest thing that stood out for me for that, obviously, you mentioned the noise of the goal, but I remember us looking at each other in sort of 55th, 60th minute, saying about how loud it was in the stadium. It felt like the final 5 minutes of a game for the last half an hour. So I think we've got to say credit where credit's due. The fans turn up, and the fans can make such a big difference. And I think that's what Mikel Arteta alluded to today, is that, you know, 96 minutes tomorrow, however long it is, everyone's just got to bring their voice and be as loud as possible, because it makes such a big, big difference.
It is immense. Like, you know, we've had 8 wins on the row in a row this year since 2024. It's the longest unbeaten run in the league this season. The unity among the fans in the main, the connection between the fans, but also the connection between the players as well. We talked about Ramsdale, and we talked about how difficult he had just before half time. But watch this. This is the players coming back to Aaron Ramsdale afterwards. You know, we are one team. We saw this in the Amazon video about how important he is as a character within the dressing room. But also, people talk about, including myself privately, about Arteta and the relationship that Ramsdale has have together. But you can see the hugs and the love that's going on for the guy and the whole team together. The unity among the players is huge. It makes a huge difference to these players, and it makes a huge difference to us fans. So the message from seeing that little video clip there from me is, let's keep the unity on the pitch and off the pitch, because tomorrow night is absolutely huge. It's, you know, Arsenal have already said, this the stadium is going to bring the energy, bring your noise and bring your passion, is what they've asked. Lineups, well, Martinelli is a worry. He left the Emirates in a protective boot, Alex, after the game. Was that in the Porto game, or is he still wearing one?
I think it was the Sheffield game.
And Tomiyasu's back in training, but he's the one. In the stuff I read beforehand, he was still a slight doubt. So what do you know on available players?
Yeah, so the update from Arteta today was that Tomiyasu was in full training today, so he could be available for selection for the squad tomorrow. On Martinelli, he said there's 1% chance that he's going to be in the squad tomorrow, so he didn't want to completely rule him out. So we never know if it's mind games from him, but it does seem like he's going to have a break until the City game.
Dan, your thoughts on learning from the Porto experience and even the Brentford experience at the weekend, at the negative style of football, the difference.
It was a good test for us.
It was a good test, the Porto and the Brentford game. But we've learned a lot from last season to this season on how to, if you look at the run in, and we were 10 points or 8 points clear, and we blew it, as some people say, and bottle and this, that, and the other. But this season looks like we're growing into the Premier League, and we're right in here in this title race. The Champions League is a new kettle of fish for us. We haven't been in it for 7 years. And the knockout stages, they're a different level. And Porto are no mugs. They've been in the knockout stages 7 out of the last 9 at this level. We've got to learn hugely from last 2-3 weeks ago. I still not recovered, really, but
I mean, look, we need to learn, and we need to learn very, very quickly. But we've got guys on that pitch that can do that. So we're playing against a team, in my opinion, completely different to Brentford. Porto are well-practiced, well-versed, and have players like Pepe in there that's as experienced as you can get at that level. And they are going to know and be performing every little trick in the book that they can to slow us down, to break our rhythm, to do what they do, which is they sit in, they are compact, they don't give you space. That's what Porto do. They're good at it. That's their biggest asset. They do it in the league in Portugal week in, week out, you know. And on top of that, they've gained a bit of confidence recently with some big, big wins over the likes of Benfica. And I think they won 3-0 away this weekend on Friday as well. So it's going to be a tough job, but we've got a very, very good side. And with the crowd at the minute, like it is in the Emirates, if it continues that way, I've got no doubts we'll beat them. But it isn't going to be, in my opinion, as easy as a lot of people are saying. It's something that even as a lot of fans in that ground are going to be inexperienced in those sort of situations as well, because it has been so long since we've been in the Champions League, and we have got lots and lots of new young fans coming through as well that have been great the last few years. So we also need patience as a fan base and just trust what the players do on the pitch and stay behind them for the whole game.
Do you know what, Ben? I wish I shared your confidence, mate. I think it's a game. It's really a tie between Porto and Arsenal over the two legs of experience v quality, right? I think that Porto have got the experience, but we've got the quality. Now, when Porto were at home, they could use their experience on their home pitch with the backing of their fans to nullify our quality, right? But now it reverses. Now the quality's at home behind a loud set of raucous supporters, and our quality should beat their experience on the night, right? I'm an old head when it comes to these Champions League games and European games in general, if I'm honest. And I remember the downs. I remember that because we haven't overperformed in Europe by a long way, the Arsenal, you know. And I just remember the performances where we just haven't turned up. And I think, please don't let that be tomorrow. If that's not tomorrow, if the crowd lifts, the quality beats the experience on the night, then we'll win comfortably. I want us to score an early goal, because if we don't get an early goal and it goes into the second half at 0-0, then we'll have to come out a bit more and open up a bit more. And then that's what Porto are looking for, because they'll try and dive in behind us and score a goal. So lots of people are confident. You know, Trolls is confident here. Look, I wish I shared that confidence. I think we'll win, but I think it's going to be a battle, boys. I really think it's going to be a battle.
I need the result in the 90 minutes at least. Alex is coming over with his sister tomorrow and crashing at ours, and it's a very early flight back to Denmark. Are you the earlier flight? Because I've got a business flight as well to take at 6:40, so I know where it stands at 5 a.m. So
I'm getting used to those early flights.
we just don't want extra time. As said in the chat there,
my nerves wouldn't be able to cope with extra time in being in the stadium. But I think Trevor's right in saying the early goal could be key to how the match is going to play out tomorrow, because if we do get the early goal, I think it will just be too much for Porto. But if it drags on and they manage to slow the game down and do like
that's the fear.
Get
that's
on the with fear. The antics, yeah, and hopefully the referees learned a bit from the last time. I saw it's a good referee who's been appointed. He's one of the top ones.
It was a Dutch referee out there. It was a French referee.
Clement Chupang, I think his name is. But yeah, I mean, hopefully he doesn't fall for the same things that the other ref did last time. And he lets the game play on and we get some rhythm into the game. But I think the Emirates is going to be roaring tomorrow, and I think the energy that we'll give the players will help them get the win.
In response to Dale's comment about what does Kevin Nolan think about the game, he doesn't know anything about Champions League football, does he? So, no, you know, Bolton... Daniel. The ultimate. yeah, there we go. Listen, Arsenal.
Just get back to the game a second, right? Because the Kevin Nolan thing makes me laugh. But yeah.
If we
do score early tomorrow, that means Porto have got to open up and try and score a goal. And then it becomes a completely different game of football. That's when Saka rubs his hands in glee on one wing, and whoever we've got in the other wing rubs their hands with glee, and Jorginho and Rice start finding the spaces that they'll have to leave. And then we go. Then we go. If we get an early goal, we go, and we win comfortable. Just getting that early goal, son.
Look, Porto are third place in La Liga Portugal. They're not been great domestically, but recently after they played us, they beat Benfica 5-0, and then they've just beaten, is it Portimonese? I don't know, whatever, 3-0 this weekend. But Arsenal's record against them isn't that bad. Head to head, we've had three wins. They've had three wins, have been one draw. The last time we beat them in 2010, we beat them.
You know what happened last time? There was a big Danish Viking man who scored a hat trick.
What, Lord Bentner?
Yeah. God, I thought he was going to drop the bomb then, Ferg.
Honestly, I did.
I thought he was going to drop the bomb.
Hey, listen, somebody just grab a mate to log on somewhere. We're on 499 viewers right now. Just let's hit the 500. That would be absolutely fantastic. Listen,
just ask Kevin, mate. He'll come on.
He'll come on. Yeah. I'll send him a text right now. did we want to do predictions on this game? I don't know if I do actually want to do a prediction on this game.
Yes.
Go on, you do.
We have to do predictions on this game. Oh, I don't know, folk.
Here we go, 500.
Oh, wonderful. Well done. Wonderful. Listen, Ferg's going to say it in a minute, right? We've got 500 people out there watching just these four lads having a chat. None of us are very experienced in this media game. Fergus leads us. He does all the technical work. And we just come on here and talk and talk and talk. 500 of you out there, thank you so much. I know Fergus is going to thank you in a minute, but thank you so much. And tomorrow, right, I'm going to say we are going to get the early goal and we're going to get four. We're going to get four tomorrow.
Okay. Dan?
I'm going to go for 3-1.
You're on my nerves, first of all, because you've got to be jumping around like a... with a flag on your back.
Careful what you say, mate.
Listen, Ferg, I'm gonna ignore you for the benefit of all the people watching and for the Arsenal tomorrow night. Yes, I will be jumping up and down like a lunatic, and hopefully you will be too. But will be. I'm going for 3-1. I think we're not safe until we get the second or the third. I don't think it's gonna be as easy as one early goal and then they open up, but I do think we've got the quality to beat them.
Okay. Alex?
My predictions for the weekend's game were shocking. So I don't know if I even want to try and make a prediction for this one. But my prediction will be that Kai Havertz will score tomorrow. I know he'll score tomorrow.
Waka waka, 60 million.
Score? That prediction?
Out of the drain.
Kai Havertz scored again.
4-1.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to be a bit more conservative. I think it's going to be more nervy. I'm going to be having eggs. I expect... I'm going 2-0 Arsenal. I expect us to get through, but we're going to make it difficult. But you know what? We're going to make it difficult all the way to Wembley. That's my view. I think we're going all the way. We're going on...
What does Dan always say to you? What does Dan always say to you?
By the way, Dan,
if we do get to beat Porto tomorrow, are you coming on a European jaunt, son?
I've already got it booked off work, mate. So just in case. Sorry. Absolutely.
Alex, would you like to join us? You're very welcome.
Yes, please. Fergus, I would very much.
Fergus, are you coming on a European jaunt if we beat Porto?
I would love to, but unfortunately, due to my poor diary planning and trying to get brownie points to make sure I could go.
Oh, here we go.
I booked a holiday for me and the good wife away. I'm either going to miss the home one or the away one, but we're going away for a week.
No words.
Yeah.
It's so, such a bad comment. I think we should sack him for the next show on Thursday.
Absolutely.
From this point onwards, Fergus, you're not on the show Thursday.
Yeah, so folks, you're having a one match ban, mate. You're on a yeller. You're having a one match ban.
Right, okay. I'm in a sin bin. Guys, I won't be here on Thursday for the preview
reason
game.
We just said. Anyway, moving on.
I've got other commitments that I have to do with work and so on. So, but I'll tell you what's going to be really interesting. I've got a couple of screens going on here, and for an hour before this started, myself and Trevor, I was running them through how all this works and how all these images come up and everything else. And thankfully, he's got Alex as well to help him up and maybe write up some facts and topics as well that they can share. I'm going to be in a hotel room. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to get a nice cold beer. Well, a colder one than this one has gone warm now. A cold beer, and I'm going to watch this with pleasure. And when you cock it up or get a name wrong, or say Chelsea instead of the Arsenal or Man United or whatever, and you cock something up, I will be laughing.
Or pull up some wrong images.
Oh, Fergus. Yeah. Pull up.
Fergus, you listening, son? I don't give a damn about getting a name wrong. I'll just be happy if I get us all on the screen as a start. If you want to join us on Thursday, I know Arsenal aren't playing next weekend, but there's some games to discuss, and we do it with a bit of an Arsenal bias. It is good. We enjoy doing it. So we'll do the four or five games that there are over the weekend, and probably have a little bit of chat about what we do when there are no Arsenal games, because I know, you know, we've all got different things we do when there's not an Arsenal team playing. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. As I say, the screen will be like you see it now. Any more than that might be down to a bit of luck, I think. So, yeah.
One of the topics I'm sure you'll go through will be this, the run-in. Arsenal got Man City away, Luton at home, Brighton away, Villa at home, Wolves, Tottenham away, Bournemouth, Man United, Everton and Chelsea is undecided. But the one common denominator between ourselves, Liverpool and Manchester City in this title race is there's one pathetic team that I'm 53 years on this earth, and Arsenal Football Club have won.
Stop lying.
Won the league.
Cheer up, boss, the Cockloo.
Arsenal Football Club won the league seven times in my lifespan so far, and Tottenham have won none, but they have a huge influence on this league title, but they ain't winning it.
Let me back you up with that, mate. It's an easy way to look at it, right? I was born in 1962, right? Tottenham last won the league in 1961.
So what you're saying is Tottenham won the league before Father Christmas was born.
Absolutely, but there's a more important point that I'm going to make, mate, right? In that if I'd have been unfortunate enough to be dragged up as a Tottenham fan, I would have never seen my team win the league, but I would have seen us relegated. You know, what a sad show it is, eh? What a poor show it is. So pleased I dragged up the red side of North London.
I've got a little statistic to finish the podcast on. We are the fourth team to win the first eight Premier League games of the calendar year. And the three previous teams who did it, do you know what they went on to do?
Win the Champions League.
They all won the Premier League. So hopefully we'll live up to that and go on and win the Premier League and the Champions League as well.
I'm worried now, Dan. I'm worried, Dan. I'm worried.
I've got another stat as well, and it's a very good final stat, I think, to end the show on, is that if you look at the league table right now, we're number one.
Absolutely.
Listen, there's 530 people watching right now. A lot watching on Gunnar Hilsey's Twitter feed. We'd love if you did take a moment. If you've enjoyed the show, go across to our YouTube channel. Click on the like and subscribe. It just helps us to, you know, engage with more people, and more people will see what we do. The more people that like us, the more people that can see us. This is what we do. We're not out to be famous. We're just out to have a laugh. But what we also do every time at the end of a podcast, before we go, we have our anthem. Keep your
Marcus falls in trouble for the causes make us proud. We meet your Marcus for a couple. Forget your troubles for a while. From the fool built to the heavy, all the phase isn't the same. Cause the man might be changing, but the people will still remain.
If you're not up for tomorrow, you'll never be up for it. We are the Arsenal. We are the best. We are the Arsenal. So fuck all the rest. Listen, Trevor, thank you very much, as always, for joining. Thank you for taking this square over here on the next episode. And Alex, you're going that way.
I think out of respect to you, mate, we'll leave it blank, to be honest, on Thursday. And I'll tell you why, because there's 500 odd people out there watching. And one important point you forgot to make just now is that we don't make any money. We don't get paid for this. We do it because we just love our football club. It actually costs Fergus quite a bit of money to put this together. And I'm forever grateful to him for that. So we'll probably leave that square blank on Thursday, Ferg, because... you're a top man. You've got me right in the mood now, because this weekend when we're not playing Friday night, where am I going to be? I'm going all the way up to Newcastle to watch Mr. Louis Dunford, and I cannot wait.
Cheers. Alex, it's going to be amazing how he's going to fill that blank square, because this is the studio.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. Yeah. I don't know what he's going to fill it up with.
Idea, Trevor. I've got a little idea.
I know how you can do it, and I think Dan knows as well. But that, listen, it'd be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. Dan, Alex, as always, thank you very much. I'll see
you very soon.
I'll see you all tomorrow night. Up the Arsenal, fuck the Spurs. Thank you, everybody who's tuned in. I've loved it. It's been brilliant. I wasn't in the mood at the start.
Thanks for listening to Guns and Yellow Ribbons, an Arsenal podcast by Arsenal fans for Arsenal fans. Follow us on Facebook at Guns and Yellow Ribbons or Twitter at Guns and Ribbons. And remember to rate and review us too. Up the Arsenal.